I'd like to turn you to Genesis chapter 29. I'd like to start at verse 30 for the transition and then read through verse 24 of chapter 30. As we have said on numerous occasions, there are some times when the chapters and verses in our English translation don't make a whole lot of sense. And here's one where crossing the chapter line seems to make more sense. So Genesis chapter 29, beginning at verse 30. Now Jacob also went into Rachel, and he also loved Rachel more than Leah. And he served with Laban still another 7 years. When Yahweh saw that Leah was unloved, he opened her womb, but Rachel was barren. So Leah conceived and bore a son and called his name Reuben, for she said, Yahweh surely has looked on my affliction. Now therefore my husband will love me. And then she conceived again and bore a son and said, because Yahweh has heard that I am unloved, he has therefore given me this son also. And she called him Simeon. She conceived again and bore a son and said, now this time my husband will become attached to me because I have borne him 3 sons. And so she called him Levi. And she conceived again and bore a son and said, now I will praise Yahweh. Therefore she called his name Judah. Then she stopped bearing. Now when Rachel saw that she bore Jacob no children, Rachel envied her sister and said to Jacob, give me children or I die. And Jacob's anger was aroused against Rachel. He said, am I in the place of God, who has withheld from you the fruit of the womb? So she said, here is my maid Bilhah. Go into her and she may bear a child on my knees, and I also may have children by her. So she gave him Bilhah, her maid, as wife, and Jacob went into her. And Bilhah conceived and bore Jacob a son. And Rachel said, God has judged my case, and he has heard my voice and given me a son. So she called his name Dan. And Rachel's maid Bilhah conceived again and bore Jacob a second son. And Rachel said, with great wrestlings I have wrestled with my sister, and indeed I have prevailed. And so she called his name Naphtali. When Leah saw that she had stopped bearing, she took Zilpah, her maid, and gave her to Jacob as wife. And Leah's maid Zilpah bore Jacob a son. And Leah said, a troop is coming. So she called his name Gad. Leah's maid Zilpah bore Jacob a second son. And Leah said, I am happy, for the daughters will call me blessed. And so she named him Asher. Now Reuben went in the days of wheat harvest and found mandrakes in the field and brought them to his mother Leah. Then Rachel said to Leah, please give me some of your son's mandrakes. But she said, is it a small matter that you have taken away my husband? Would you take away my son's mandrakes too? Rachel said, therefore he will lie with you tonight for your son's mandrakes. When Jacob came out of the field that evening, Leah went out to meet him and said, you must come in to me, for I have surely hired you with my son's mandrakes. And he lay with her that night. And God listened to Leah, and she conceived and bore Jacob a fifth son. And Leah said, God has given me my wages because I have given my maid to my husband, and she called his name Issachar. Then Leah conceived again and bore Jacob a sixth son. And Leah said, God has endowed me with a good endowment. Now my husband will live with me because I have borne him 6 sons. And she called his name Zebulun. Afterward she bore a daughter and named her Dinah. Then God remembered Rachel. And God listened and opened her womb. And she conceived and bore a son and said, God has taken away my reproach. So she called his name Joseph and said, Yahweh shall add another son to me. That far. Of course, the reading and the reason for the connection is, this is the birth of Jacob's children. At least the 13 of them that we see, or 12 of them that we have seen so far. One will come later. So that was the connection of them between chapter 29 and chapter 30. So we've seen dysfunctional families, and I don't mean in the world, I mean in Abraham and Sarah, and Isaac and Rebekah, and we've seen those, and we're seeing them again. The hardship and the havoc and heartbreak of those sins, which those sins have caused, the dysfunctionality, We've seen it. And it's in Scripture so that we would see it. And you may say, well, he could have said it once and that's enough. I doubt it. Most of us don't learn on the first time. Most of us still have trouble learning on the 101st time. We have seen the greed. We have seen the supplantation which sinners have shown and how it has exasperated those broken relationships. So we saw the greed of Jacob, and we saw the greed of Rebekah. We saw the greed of Esau. We saw the greed that was involved as Ishmael despised his brother. We saw all of that broken relationship and how one trying to step on the other to get ahead destroys the family. And we saw that for a reason. We saw it because the family is not some sort of an organization which you fight for yourself. It's supposed to be an organization by which you work together. And to work together means that you submit to one another so that there's mutual submission involved in that relationship. There's not domination. But domination comes in because that's what we want. We want to supplant the other. We don't want to serve them. We don't want to work with them. We don't want to recognize them as equals. We want to be in charge. And in that, we have seen the rebellion against God's promises and against his prophecies. We have seen the hardness of the heart and the disobedience. And yeah, it does look like a reality show or a soap opera. Or some of those shows like the Maury Povich show or the former mayor of Cleveland and his show, where all you see is people fighting with each other and all of the things that are involved in that kind of hatred and desire to rule, because that's what the world is. But this is the Bible. How can it be so full of such incredible meanness and stupidity and sin? Maybe because we, as a human race, are. Why should those shows be popular? The ones we mentioned a few moments ago. They're popular because we like them. Even if it's only to say, see, I'm better than that. We like those shows. We like to be able to say, how can they be that stupid? I'm not. We like it to be able to say, how can they be so cruel? I'm not. But we are. You see, this is just another chapter in the report of man's sinfulness and God's incredible mercy and faithfulness. And it's reality. I mean, in all fairness, whoever invented the reality TV show would have done a better job if he'd simply taken the scripture and said, okay, here's the plot line. Because God is reporting to us what goes on in our hearts and in our minds. And so here's Jacob. Laban has abused him. Laban has tried to demonstrate that he's in charge. Laban's going to put him to work at virtually no pay. 7 years for Leah. Well, 7 years you thought you were getting Rachel, but I'm in charge, so I gave you the one I wanted. Please. That's what Laban thought. Okay? What God thought was a little bit different. Because God brings that to pass, in God's providence, Leah was the one that Jacob needed much more than Rachel, whom he wanted. But Jacob's not interested in that. That's his rebellion against what God's doing. I want what I want. I was born second. Yes, we were twins. We were born within a very short time of each other. But my brother came out first and I want to be first. And God had said, that's what's going to happen. You are going to be first. Before they were born. But Jacob said, Dad's not treating it that way and I want to make sure it's that way. So he supplanted Esau with regard to his birthright in Esau's mind and promise, and then before his father. So he works another 7 years after he's given Rachel. And verse 31 begins, "When Yahweh saw that Leah was unloved, he opened her womb." So Jacob was given time to show his real colors. He was given time to show that what God had wanted him to have for a wife wasn't what he wanted. He was going to get what he wanted, and so he worked it out in his mind as to get what he wanted. What he got, well, I won't say either of them were great prizes. But in God's economy, Jacob should have said, if God gave me this wife, that's the one I'm supposed to have. His father had said that. Abraham had challenged that. But his father Isaac had said it. But suddenly it's not good for him. He has a better idea. Because his rebellion against God is far more than his father's. If I were to take you back to Exodus chapter 21 and just read verse 10 for a moment while it's on a slightly different subject. If he takes another wife, he shall not diminish her food, her clothing, and her marriage rights. And if he does not do these things for her, then she shall go free without paying any money. A reference to what happens when you marry a slave that you have taken, probably in combat. Okay, but here's the nature of it. God says, if that's the wife you have, you can't change the relationship by making her second fiddle. You'll find that in 1 Corinthians chapter 7 too, although slightly differently again. You cannot take her affection away. You cannot take the affection that she is due because she is the wife that God put you with. Jacob doesn't think that. Now, I admit Exodus hasn't been written yet, and certainly 1 Corinthians hasn't been written yet. But as Jesus says about it, this is the way it was at the beginning. God made one man and one woman, and he didn't make one man and six women and say to Adam, who do you like best? He said, I made the one you needed. When Yahweh saw that Leah was unloved, that Jacob was that disobedient to what God had set as the order in creation, he opened her womb, but Rachel was barren. He gave her children. Now that obviously means that Jacob was not exactly averse to her, though he despised her in the sense that he put her as second fiddle to Rachel. But God's providence is not seen by Jacob, not even in this. You see, the men of those days, and Jacob in at least obvious evidence, were interested in sons. Children to pass on the heritage. Children to make a larger force of work for working for you. Children for making a larger force in the community so that you could get your will more easily. And that you'd have a larger group of people who were subject to you, or at least would pay you honors, and probably a few dollars too. So Jacob's interested in that. Rachel doesn't have any. Rachel was barren. And it never occurs to Jacob that that's God's doing. Not until the fight comes. And then he blames it on God, even though he doesn't recognize what it means. The competition? Well, the competition is coming. As Leah gets more attention, bearing more sons, Rachel's going to get more and more jealous. Rachel has none. It's God's commentary on the relationship. But yet, Rachel will bear Joseph. And Joseph's quite a prize. But when you talk about the sons of Jacob, it's Leah's sons who become the priests and the kings. So God obviously has set something in mind here and set something before us, emphasizing that first wife and the place and responsibility she is because of his blessing on her. Joseph's kids? Rachel's prized son. They become a byword for all that is evil and rebellious in Israel. Joseph isn't, please. But Ephraim and Manasseh become the byword for the northern kingdom and for all those who are in rebellion against the God of Israel. Now, when Leah conceived and bore a son, she called his name Reuben. Conjunction, if you will, of two phrases, two words, which are related to the word to see. He has seen, literally God, as literally God has seen, and he has given me a son. You might translate it, see my son, but she said, Yahweh has looked on my affliction, therefore my husband will love me. So the implication is, look at my son, it's Yahweh's doing. See what Yahweh has done and given to me. And she uses his name, Yahweh. That's not too unusual. First of all, Yahweh was a god of the family, even if he wasn't worshipped by Laban very well, if at all. But they all knew about Abraham, and they all knew about Isaac, because Isaac was married to one of the sisters. So Isaac is married to Rachel's and Leah's aunt. They knew about that. And they knew the God there, and they knew a little bit about that God. They didn't know a great deal about him, but they knew that Abraham and Isaac were rich. And in the polytheism of that day, if you were rich, the God must be on your side. Whatever God was your patron saint, your patron God, he was on your side. And so if Abraham is rich and Yahweh is his God, Yahweh must be blessing him. And if Isaac is rich, there must be something to this Yahweh. Maybe there's some way we can get some of that. And now here comes Jacob, and he's in the family. So whether it's Leah's hope or whether it's the Spirit of God working in Leah, she conceived and she bore the son, and she says, behold, see my son. Yahweh has surely looked upon my affliction. Now my husband will love me. Then she conceived again and bore a son, and said, because Yahweh heard that I am unloved, he has given me this son. So she called his name Simeon. Yahweh has heard. Shema, the word for to hear. Simeon. Obviously, when she said the first time, Yahweh has seen my son, or here's the son that Yahweh gave me, look at him. My husband will love me. Now she says he knew I was unloved. That must mean that didn't change Jacob. So now she says, God's heard me. And it wasn't just one time. Now I have two sons. And she conceived and bore a third son. She said, now my husband will become attached to me because I have borne him three sons. And so she called him Levi, which literally means to be stuck to or attached. So now she's saying, one son didn't work, two sons didn't work, three sons will work. What it'll do is make me queen of the house. Now, there is something that needs to be said, and that is that she's not conceiving without a husband. Okay? So whatever Jacob's doing, his idea is that he likes Rachel better, he treats Rachel better, he's interested in blessing Rachel as much as he can, but Leah's the one who's producing. Now she conceived again and bore a son, and she said, now I will praise Yahweh. Therefore she called his name Judah, which is a function of participle from the word to praise. And she stopped bearing. Now probably wasn't because there were no more sexual relations there. She stopped bearing. There was a pause, a hiatus in the bearing children. We don't know what the time frame was. We don't know how many years it was. But in all of those years, Jacob has demonstrated his colors. Here's the wife who is demonstrably God's blessing, who's demonstrably providing the things that God that he would want, and as well the things that God apparently wanted for her and for him. And Rachel's not producing those things, so something's in the way of that. And he refuses to see that what's in the way of that is his affection for Rachel as opposed to Leah. Not that he shouldn't be loving Rachel. He's married to her. as much as that's unbiblical. Okay? But Rachel was his prize. When everybody looking at what was happening in the household would say, Leah's the prize. Rachel may look good, but Leah's the prize. She's got four sons. It's been at least 4 years. Rachel doesn't have any. Something's wrong. And so chapter 30 begins. Now Rachel, when she saw that she bore Jacob no children, she envied her sister. And she said to Jacob, "Give me children or I will die." I sort of doubt that this was the first time she envied her sister. But before this, she had always had a chance to say in her mind, "Jacob loves me better. Jacob loves me better. Jacob loves me better. Because Jacob loves me better, it's okay." But now it's no longer okay. And instead of being something that she can ignore, it now becomes a cause for competition. So here's Jacob. He's got this wife with four sons and this wife with no sons. And the wife with no sons is saying, okay, eventually this means he's going to turn away from me and he's going to take her, and I don't want that to happen. And so I'm going to do everything I can to get ahead of my sister. I don't know about you. Judy and I were brother and sister, so we're not exactly the same. But that was the relationship between us all the time we lived at home. One of us was always trying to get ahead of the other. So what I want to say is, you look at these two, and I want you to see the sin. I just don't want you to see the sin at arm's length. Because the sin's right here in us. That's why it's here in the text. Rachel envied her sister and said to Jacob, "Give me children or else I die." Notice she looks at it and she says, "Give them to me, husband." Jacob's anger, verse 2, is roused against Rachel when he said, "Am I in the place of Elohim?" You'll notice I used a different word for God. The text uses Lord in capital letters for Yahweh, and it uses God when it's talking about Elohim. And Elohim is God in the general term. Yahweh is his covenant name and the relationship between him and his people. Jacob said, "Am I in the place of Elohim who has withheld from you the fruit of the womb?" Leah's been saying what about these children? Yahweh? Whatever's in Leah, it's a whole lot closer to righteousness than what's in Rachel. And what's in Jacob? But we don't have enough to say how close it is. She at least recognizes that the God who has blessed that family, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, has blessed her. Jacob doesn't use that word. "Am I in the place of God who has withheld from you the fruit of the womb?" And yet he doesn't say, "What's the problem?" He says, "It's God's doing, not mine. Blame him." It never occurs to him to say, "When my dad and mom had trouble conceiving and it had been 20 years and there weren't any conceptions, my dad prayed." He says, "Blame God. It's his fault." But he doesn't pray. I want you to understand Jacob, please. And I plead with you to understand Jacob. Until he wrestles with the angel of Yahweh at Peniel, Jacob is unconverted and he's as godless as any other pagan. And the reason I can say that and point that to you is what happens at Peniel besides the wrestling match? The Lord Jesus, who is that angel of Yahweh, says to him, "No longer shall your name be Jacob, but Israel shall be your name." And in those days, the name was a demonstration of the nature. So instead of being supplanter and deceiver, Jacob, you will now become a prince with God, a warrior with God. Okay? you'll be fighting on God's side. So Rachel said, "Here is my maid Bilhah. Go into her, and she will bear a child on my knees, so that I also may have children by her." We got Hagar again. Okay? Same thing was done with Sarah and Hagar and Abraham. Rachel's going to claim the child just as Sarah claimed Ishmael. Rachel's going to claim it because Bilhah's a slave, and so Rachel owns everything that Bilhah is and produces. So she gave him Bilhah, her maid, as a wife, and Jacob went into her. Well, let's see now. Leah, Rachel, Bilhah. Oh, he's up to Esau in terms of wives. And Bilhah conceived and bore Jacob a son. And Rachel said, "Elohim, God has judged my case, and he has heard my voice and given me a son." Therefore she called his name Dan, which means judge. "He has judged my case. He has defended me. I am now equal or better than my sister. He has given me what I demanded or what I wanted." Well, you'll notice something about that, though. Jacob doesn't seem to be involved in any of these things. Let me emphasize to you, as a parent, Jacob's not a good example. He's a very hands-off father. He's very much on an impregnate the wife father, but he's very little of a hands-on father. Only after he wrestles at Peniel will he even pay any attention to any of the sons except Joseph. Bilhah conceived and bore Jacob a son, and Rachel said, "God has judged my case and has heard my voice and given me a son." So she called his name Dan. And Rachel's maid Bilhah conceived again and bore Jacob a second son. And Rachel said, "With great wrestlings I have wrestled with my sister, and I have prevailed." So she called his name Naphtali, wrestling. I won. I am the queen of the house. I mean, I want you to picture what's going on. Okay? This makes soap operas look a little tame. Now when Leah saw that she had stopped bearing children, she took Zilpah, her maid, and gave her to Jacob as a wife. And you'll notice that Jacob doesn't say one wife was bad, one wife was good, two wives was not good, three wives was less good, four wives now? Now he's ahead of Esau. When Leah saw that she had stopped bearing, she took Zilpah, her maid, and gave her to Jacob as a wife. And Jacob never says, "That's enough." Now, that's probably because it was common in the society. But it's also going to be common in Israel, not because it's right, but because it's the sin of men in general. And so David's going to wind up with 25 wives. His son Solomon's going to multiply that by quite a few, like about 40. 40 times 25. And Leah's maid Zilpah bore Jacob a son, and Leah said, "A troop comes. I had four, here comes some more." And so she names him Gad, which means a troop. And Leah's maid Zilpah bore Jacob a second son, and Leah said, "I'm happy. For the daughters will call me blessed," and she called his name Asher, which means happiness. So now Leah has gone from, "This is Yahweh's blessing," to, "My sister didn't get ahead of me. And all of the people around are going to notice that. All of the other ladies in the society around me, they're going to recognize that I'm really the queen of the house, not my sister." And so now you have the infighting and you have the competition. And it's an unholy competition. There's no competition for being righteous. There's no competition for helping Jacob become more righteous. There's no competition for anything other than getting ahead of the other one. Now in verse 14, Reuben went in the days of wheat harvest and found mandrakes in the field. You can look up mandrakes. What you will find in the dictionary probably isn't what this is. But in that day, whatever it was considered to be an aphrodisiac, not just to make you more desirable, but to make you more fertile. So this was the way to overcome infertility. Leah would be interested in that because she has stopped bearing sons. Rachel would be interested in that because she hasn't born any yet. And it's Leah's son, Reuben, who finds them. And so he brought them to his mother, Leah. And Rachel said to Leah, "Give me some, please." And Leah said, in a burst of generosity and love for her sister, "Wasn't it enough you stole my husband? Now you're going to take this? I have a chance to get pregnant again, and I have a chance to bear more sons or more daughters. I have a chance to, and you're going to take that away now too?" And of course that means there's rebellion. There's fighting. There's conflict. In a family that wasn't supposed to be in conflict. So Rachel said, "I'll make you a deal. You give me some of the mandrakes, and he sleeps with you tonight." Who's running this family? Jacob's not running this family. He just got sold. Rachel said, "Therefore he will lie with me tonight for your son's mandrakes. Therefore, he will lie with you tonight for your son's mandrakes." So when Jacob came in out of the field that evening, Leah went out to meet him and said, "You have to come in to sleep with me tonight because I bought you with my son's mandrakes." And Jacob says, well, he must have said yes, because he goes in and sleeps with her that night. And God listened to Leah. And she conceived and bore Jacob a fifth son. And Leah said, "Elohim has given me my wages because I have given my maid to my husband. I gave my maid to my husband and Yahweh is paying me back." Or in this case, she says, "Elohim is paying me back." And then she conceived again and bore a sixth son. And Leah said, "Elohim has endowed me with a good endowment. Now my husband will dwell with me because I have borne him six sons. I've made him rich." And so she called him Zebulun. Let's see, she called him Zebulun. So Leah's ahead 8-2. I mean, that's what's going on. Okay? Leah's ahead 8-2 now. She has six sons of her own, two sons by Zilpah. Rachel has no sons of her own, and she has two sons by Bilhah. But then God remembered Rachel, and God listened to her and opened her womb, and she conceived and bore a son. And she said, "God has taken away, Elohim has taken away my reproach." And she called his name Joseph. She called his name Joseph. Blessing. She called his name a gift. And then she said, "Yahweh will add to me another son." This is the first time Rachel says anything about Yahweh. And Leah has stopped saying things about Yahweh. So you have, Rachel now has a son. So the final score to this point, or at least, is 8-3. 6-2 against 1-2. So who's more valuable? And you see where the battle is. The maids are even, but Leah has six, and Rachel has one. And Rachel will have one more. And then Rachel gives birth to another, Leah gives birth, rather, to another. Her name is Dinah. Dinah will come up again in chapter 34 as a problem, and it'll be a result of all of the things that are still sinful in the family. So why am I interested in this passage? Why didn't I just say, turn on the soap opera this afternoon, read it, and think about it? Where's Jacob been in all of this? Besides fathering children. He's not leading his family. He's not teaching or exercising authority, God's authority, which was given to the husband in a relationship. His wives have not helped him toward Yahweh. He hasn't been interested in going to Yahweh. Remember the deal he made. He said to Yahweh at Bethel, if you keep your promise that you made to me that you would bring me back here, if you do that, then I will bestow my worship upon you. But in the meantime, you have to prove yourself. So you're looking at that. So what's running this family? It's not God in their minds. It's their rank. Being number one is most important. In Jacob's case, he only gets to keep score. I suppose he enjoys it, but don't know. Their treasure is in the rank and the place they have here in this world. There is little, if any, place for God at all. We're going to see that as we look at Jacob's agreement with Laban next time, on the 29th. So you look at these people and you see what's going on and you see what's happening and how the pattern is in their lives. Without the miracle of God's intervention, they cannot see, they cannot hear, and they cannot come to faith. God has to step in and he has to change them. He has to bring them to himself. Because they're not coming. And as much as I would like to say that my parents were in the church, and my parents sought to serve the Lord, and therefore it was foregone that I would see from their example, and seeing from their example I would come to faith, that wasn't me. And it probably isn't you either. So my interest is in holding this up as these are the sins that are common to us. These are the sins that we plead that God will restrain us from and that his Spirit will change us so that we don't fall into them overtly as we have already fallen into them covertly. We do these things under the covers. We think if we pull the covers up over our heads and nobody sees it, nobody knows, and God doesn't know either. They are exactly the same soap opera and reality show that we are. They're a little more blatant, okay? But our sin is just as bad as theirs. Our sins are equal in the eyes of the justice of God. And so the miracle of our being brought to faith by God's work is just as necessary, and that it's miraculous is just as possible for anyone in sin. And the miracle of his conversion is just as real and just as gracious as it will be for Jacob's conversion. And that's the awe that we're supposed to take away from what this passage is. The purpose of the Old Testament is to show us as faithfully and powerfully what sin is and what God's salvation is. Just as the New Testament is powerfully designed to show us how that sin is dealt with and how it is expiated, this is to show us what it produces and what that salvation produces. Not just the sin. The salvation produces something different. When Jacob comes back from that wrestling match, he's still got problems, but he's a different man. Just as Peter, when he comes back from weeping after denying Jesus three times, is a different man. The salvation that they receive from God as sinners is just as real for us. And so you're looking at a passage that ought to say to you, as God was, so he continues to be. And the whole of the Bible, from Old Testament to New Testament, from Genesis 1 to the end of Revelation, all of those words are equally important because all of them reveal God and his nature and his dealing with us. is dealing with all of his creation. And so they instruct us on who he is and what he has done and the faithfulness of his commitment. His commitment to the creation, day and night shall not cease, Genesis 8. His commitment to those whom he has called to himself, Israel, the seed of Abraham by faith, and those today whom he has called to himself. Bow with me. In